NFL in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is Football Fridays. The 4-0 Calgary Stampeders, basking in the glory of a 26-22 victory over the Edmonton Eskimos yesterday. It's a lot of things. A Picasso? No. Fun? Yes. Absolutely it is. Because everybody loves a good debate. Chris Jones setting the table with the fake punt deep in his own end at the end of the first half. And the Stampeders make him pay. Boy, the Stampeders were really good yesterday in the turnover battle. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't get a lot done offensively over four quarters, but took advantage when opportunity presented itself, which includes our guest coming up this hour as well.
Yeah, Keenan McDougal with the block punt and also the big play you talked about, the Chris Jones. He's the one who made the big stop on that play.
Which everybody talks about the gutsy call, but he made a great play.
Oh, great. We'll talk to him about that. Yeah. You talked about taking advantage of the turnovers. Calgary had a lot more penalties than Edmonton, but Calgary, I think, kind of made Edmonton pay for their penalties a lot, too. Like, if Edmonton got themselves into penalty trouble, especially in that fourth quarter, the going after the ball that could have been a single point in the end zone, then Calgary, you know, doesn't, you know, takes advantage of that mistake. And there's a few others that Edmonton took some late penalties that Calgary just really, you know, made Edmonton pay for them.
Well, and there was even some challenges and things that weren't challenged that it was yeah. There was, again,
we needed a game like this, though.
It was not a classic. Just not a classic in terms of finish, but in terms of storylines, fantastic theater.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
fantastic theater. Later on in Football Fridays, normally we stick close to the script on the CFL, but we are going to take a little bit of diversion from Sportsnet. Jordan Heath Rawlings will join us. Boy, this Baltimore Ravens Ray Rice story is blowing up everywhere.
Over the States.
Oh, it's incredible. Huge. We didn't touch on it. Do want to talk to him about it. Get the ram. This isn't right. It just isn't right. Mm-hmm. It does not look good for the NFL. The Ravens, the Orioles have nothing to do with it. The Ravens look terrible. But anyway, we'll table that. So coming up, we will talk to McDougal.
Keenan McDougal, yeah.
And that'll be probably about 3:25 or so. Right now, Arash Madani is our CFL insider. He joined us as we go down the Subway restaurant Fresh Take Hotline.
Week number 5 in the CFL kicked off in Edmonton last night. We got to talk about the fake punt at the end of the first half. How amazing was that, at least as a discussion point?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, Rob, outside of Milt Siegel and myself, everybody thinks it's one of the stupidest things you'll ever see. Love the gumption, and I understand on so many levels why in football that's not the right play to make,
right.
But I understand what Chris Jones is trying to do. He's a rookie head coach with a 4-0 record. He's still installing the culture and the attitude, and he gave his player the option. Here you have a shot. If you don't see it, take the knee, concede the safety, away we go. But if you see daylight, go for it. And you know what that does, Rob? That instills belief into a lot of those guys that, all right, coach believes in us. We're doing something here. We're not just going to be the traditional way of doing things. It's worked for Chris Jones before. It didn't work out. It was a hell of a play the Stamps made to get the Eskimos short. But I just love the riverboat gambling part of it, and it obviously didn't work out, but I think Jones does it again if he has the opportunity.
Well, you know what? You found the third guy that's on the same boat, and I'll tell you why, because I'm going to take you all the way back to your sports radio days in Montreal. Do you remember the first game in 2003 in Calgary? Montreal's the visitor. Jim Barker's first game as head coach goes into overtime. He went for it on third down rather than tying the game with the field goal.
I totally remember that.
And he came in on the radio the next day and said, look, this was an opportunity for me to win my guys over. They buy into it. I don't care what everybody else says.
Right. And at the time, if you remember, in 03, Montreal was coming off winning the Grey Cup in 02. You know what a win like that does? I mean, obviously the Stamps fell short, but if you do that, suddenly everybody's saying, hey, we belong here. This is it. Like, and that's what Calgary's been. Like, the Stamps have been the class of the CFL for a few years now.
Right.
The Eskimos never beat the Stampeders anymore. What Chris Jones is saying is, fellas, to hell with them. To hell with their record. To hell with, everything they have going on. This is us against the world. And Let's not take anything away from, that was a hell of a special teams recovery. That's a hell of a defensive play the Stampeders made in that scenario. Yeah, did it turn the game? It may have. It's not like the Stampeders went on a roll in the second half and changed things. In a tight ball game, those 7 points on the touchdown to Fuller were the difference. But maybe the attitude you instill in July will pay off in August, September, and October.
Now, Arash, you did say this before I kind of butted in with my reply. You think Chris Jones would do this again?
I do. Chris Jones is a lot of things. He plays on the edge. He's aggressive. But he's not a second guesser. And he's not somebody who hadn't thought that scenario through again. That was not an emotional decision. That's a tie football game, Rob. That's a big situation. When they closed practice last week for a day, there were a lot of gadget plays and a lot of unorthodox plays we hadn't seen before. This was done with a lot of intention, a lot of thought in mind, and that's why they did it.
Arash, the game itself. I mean, I know here in Calgary, we were kind of looking at it, boy, Battle of Alberta, it's a meaningful July game. Although from a CFL perspective, considering the kind of some of the poor performances we've seen, I think a lot of us were hoping this could maybe raise the water level a bit. What your overall thoughts on the game? What was it, a good game? Was it a bad game? Is it what the league needed? How did you view it?
I mean, it wasn't an entertaining game that's going to be one of those shootouts. You know what it was, Rob? It was a barometer game in the early stage of the season, the first third of the season, just to see exactly where these teams are. It was two cautious teams that really wanted to establish the line of scrimmage. It was going to be a physical game, and that's what we saw. Now, there were going to be casualties. Obviously, losing Craighead is a concern. You know, we talked about it before with the ankle, and now losing Matt Walter. What this game right now, you know, the after effect of this game, Rob, is the Stampeders are going to need some provisions. I mean, your top two Canadian tailbacks are now down. The depth on your offensive line that's been so good for so long is really going to be tested. But they saw how they were going to measure up in a real physical blue-collar game. There is nothing out of that game that suggests to me why this rivalry can't kind of reignite itself, because the Eskimos look to be legit. The Stampeders have always been legit. Those may be the best two teams in the West Division right now, Rob.
Arash Madani is our CFL insider, joining us down the Subway Restaurant Fetch Take Hotline. I have been dying to get a chance to ask you this particular question. Your assessment of Jeff Fuller.
Ball player. Absolute stud. Big, strong, physical. Great set of hands on him. He's a lighter version of Andre Johnson. I mean, it amazes me sometimes how guys end up in the CFL, Rob. That Jeff Fuller is not on an NFL roster blows me away. You know, and sometimes guys slip through the cracks. Just ask Cam Wake. He ended up here for a couple of years. That's an NFL talent. That's a number three NFL receiver running around for the Calgary Stampeders. Rob, he's legit, man.
Is he, fans, we've been saying it here on the radio station, fans really do need to go see these games live at home, because he's not going to be here next year.
Yeah, and the thing is about him is he's not one of those, he reminds me of, a lot of Bo Richter. Remember Mark Bo Richter in 01? I mean, he was another one who he wouldn't dance around you, he'd just run over you. I mean, he's an absolute truck. He's one of those kind of guys. He's not quite big enough to be a tight end, but he's certainly not the small, lanky burner receiver, except he's got speed. That's a real find right there for John Hoffnagel, John Murphy, and their staff.
Arash, I know after the Toronto game on the road for Calgary, they won, and you came on with the guys, and you were talking about, you know, the Stamps. Yeah, maybe they're the best team in the league, but they're definitely the deepest team. Just a thought. You talked about some of the injuries. You know, you have to put Nick Lewis on the sidelines. This is a real test moving forward. Yes, they're 4-0, and maybe that's a testament to, I guess, that depth we talked about early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not only Nick Lewis, then Mo Price, and, oh, yeah, the most outstanding player in the league last year.
That guy.
And now with their offensive line, I mean, it's been one after another. But, you know, that's when you build a roster, you're always thinking scenarios, Rob.
Right.
And you always have to decide, and the unique part of the CFL is it's not just, okay, what happens if he goes down? What happens if your Canadian goes down? How is that going to affect the overall ratio? Remember when Miguel Robidaille got cut by the Toronto Argonauts, the former Stampeders' first overall pick? Jim Barker and his staff then cut Robidoux because they said, you know what, at that position, we're going to go American. So when injuries happen, it's not just about who's going to replace whom. It's how is this going to affect our Canadian talent? And how is that going to affect how the kind of roster construction is? So the more quality guys you have is of significance, and that's why the draft is as important as it is. You have to be able to find quality Canadians who can go for you.
Arash Madani, our CFL insider here on Football Fridays. We go back down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. Let's go around the league. Boy, quarterbacks, as it always seems in this league, are the hot topic. Let's start in Hamilton. Yet another starter already this year.
Rob, their third starting quarterback, and it's late July. So, yeah, Zach Collaros out with the concussion, and then it was Jeremiah Masoli got the start last week, and now Dan LeFever. What I've been told from Hamilton is they actually like the makeup of this kid. He's a calm, poised guy. He went to Central Michigan. He played in bowl games. He was a leader there. Really thought he was going to end up in the National Football League, so he's got the makeup. The other thing is, though, Rob, the big issue in Hamilton is they're now going to be going on their fourth different left tackle in four games. Their fourth left tackle, each of these guys is getting their CFL debut. Odell Willis absolutely murdered one of them. I mean, yep. Just embarrassed him. Look, they made movies about this. The blind side is the most important position on that offensive line, and the Tiger Cats have had a revolving door there. As much as the quarterback issue is, you know, it's front and center, it's the guy who's blocking him that's the real issue in Hamilton. So that's got to be cleared up, and they're hoping, I guess, the fourth time is a charm here with the tackle situation.
How panicked are they in Hamilton? I mean, this is a team that represented the East last year in the Grey Cup, and they are off to a terrible start. Is there panic there in Ken Austin's club?
There isn't, and, you know, the one thing that Scott Mitchell, their president, pointed out is, look, we're a couple of plays from being 2-1 instead of 0-3. Now, that's a good public message. And there's a little bit of truth to that, but there's not. I mean, the Tiger Cats really started slow out of the gates last year, too, if you remember. They effectively used the first 3 weeks of their season for an extended training camp. They've been a little undisciplined with their penalties. That's been an issue. But, you know, the big thing is they need their quarterback to get back into the mix. And with Zach Collaros, what I've been told, Rob, is they have a short week next week. I mean, it's a concussion. He threw the ball in practice a little bit this week, was very limited there. So it doesn't appear as if he'll be back next week, but barring a setback, and we saw with John Cornish exactly what brain trauma and brain injuries there can be, they're hoping 2 weeks from now that perhaps Collaros can be back in the mix.
Let's talk about the Montreal Alouettes. This has been a tough start, obviously, for Tom Higgins as the head coach, but I think many of us thought it could be a bye week for them. What do they have to figure out here?
They have to figure out their offense. I mean, they got absolutely humiliated at BC Place. They basically had a field goal up until garbage time, didn't score a touchdown against the BC Lions. And the real questions, I mean, Boomer and I talked about it on Monday, Rob, and from what I'm hearing out of Montreal, the conversations I've had this week, there are some questions of whether or not they believe Troy Smith is going to be the guy.
Right.
Coming out of the bye week, he's going to get at least one more start. But I really believe internally the conversations have been had that maybe we take the next step with Tanner Marsh if Smith continues to struggle. I exchanged a couple of texts with Ryan Dinwiddie, their offensive coordinator, today. I said, what's going on there? You know, where can you guys get better? And his reply was, how about we start with completing a pass? You know, so it's one of those situations where the succession plan for Anthony Calvillo was never going to be an easy one. Yeah. It was never going to be smooth, and it was not going to be pretty. But, you know, they really believed in Troy Smith, and Smith is now working with his, I think, fourth offensive coach in less than a full calendar year. It's one of those situations right now, Rob, where they really just have to get this offense going and find a way. And it wouldn't surprise me if there are more struggles with the Owls make a quarterback.
Finally, I guess I got to ask you about the Argos, and I don't know where to start, on the field or off the field. I know the off field scares me more than the on field, so let's do the positive, and it's not really that positive. Tell me a little bit about the missing. I mean, there's a lot of skill missing for the Argos. Are they get any of these guys back?
No, they're not. Andre Dury, six-game. Chad Owen, six-game. And Jason Barnes, six-game. I mean, those are three big offensive weapons that are missing. The good news for the Argos from a football standpoint, they still have Ricky Ray. defensively, they're just not the same as they were, you know, especially going back to 2012 and that 100th Grey Cup. They've lost a lot. You know, the Armstead kid went to New England and since retired. Marcus Ball is with the New Orleans Saints. Adrian O'Belly has retired. On it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Off the field, Rob, I mean, I live in Toronto. There was nobody at that Stampeder game. They have not been in the marketplace at all. David Braley has stripped that team down for it to be ready to be sold. They just actually, you know, they fired their vice president of communications and marketing this week. They have absolutely no presence here. The brand is taking a massive beating, and the CFL is just standing pat and haven't done anything about it. Mark Cohen believes that if they move to BMO Field downtown, all their problems are solved, and I'm not convinced that's the case, especially with the way this brand is absolutely getting pounded these days.
How, because you spent
it's
time...
bad, man.
Okay. I was just going to say, and I don't bring this up with any pleasure, but you were around that Renegades team, so you know what a bad organization looks like from the inside. Is it that bad?
Business ops-wise, it is.
Okay.
They're not selling any tickets. They're not at all out there. They're not spending any money. They're not investing.
Right.
It's bad. It's bad.
All right, Arash, before we let you go, let's talk about something positive. G. Roy Simon will be inducted into the BC Lions Ring of Honor. Just a thought on what this guy, the man they called Superman, his legacy.
I mean, Rob, it doesn't look like anyone's ever going to wear 81 in a BC Lions uniform ever again. It's the ultimate. I mean, you rarely retire jerseys in football anymore. You really couldn't because of how many guys on the roster there are. G. Roy Simon was the heartbeat of that team. They won multiple Gregor. They won three championships in large part because of him. You know what else G. Roy Simon did? Because there's going to be a lot of accolades and all the talk about his numbers and being the most prolific. But to me, this is what made G. Roy Simon special. One, he was a gamer. In the big moments, in the big games, you saw it again last year in the Grey Cup, that dude stepped up his game and performed when it really mattered. And the reason why, Rob, is because his preparation was ridiculous. He was tenacious in practice. He treated every rep in practice like it was a game. And you know what happens when you're a leader, when the most outstanding player, when your MVP does that in practice? It elevates the expectations of everybody else. G. Roy Simon was the ultimate pro, but he taught the young kids how to be a pro as they followed his lead. And that, to me, is a legacy. Not the championships, not the yards. It's you watch Sean Gore run around right now. His work ethic is second to none, and he learned it from G. Roy.
Right,
and that's the ultimate kind of standing in the game of how are you getting better today? Well, G. Roy Simon made that team better every day in practice, and that's why he ended up being a champion, and that's why his jersey is going to be retired. That's why he's going to the Ring of Honor, and that's why he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Always a pleasure, my friend, Arash Madani, our CFL insider. Oh, you know, before I let you go, we came up on the morning show. We kind of tussled on a little bit here. Just your thoughts. I know it's kind of, I should have asked this earlier. Bo Levi Mitchell, are you surprised that we haven't seen Drew Tate? I mean, it's been two real rough offensive games, or we maybe, should we read into this, the fact that they have that much faith in this kid?
You know, the amazing part when there's nothing to talk about because you're playing so well and you're winning is, hey, man, just win.
Just win, baby.
Keep this thing rolling, man.
Just win,
and
baby.
There's no need to mess with a good thing right now. I mean, look, things are being evaluated, but it doesn't matter how you win, Rob, just how many, right?
Absolutely. Arash Madani joining us down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, our CFL insider. And I was listening this morning to Ryan and Boomer, and somebody texted in, okay, two really lackluster offensive games. Isn't it time to put Tate in? And I got to be honest with you. Watched that game last night, and I wondered. But after the Hamilton game, you know, I think in fairness to Bo Levi Mitchell, that was a really good Edmonton defense.
Very good defense.
There was lots of times where he was checking down to his third options and trying to find some, scrambling to try and find. They were airtight out there. And, you know, Edmonton played that game tough. It was not a dynamic performance by Bo Levi Mitchell, but he won. As Arash said, you win. What are you going to do?
He managed the game well.
Yeah.
No turnovers. That's the key for me. The guy hasn't thrown an interception. How do you take him out of the game and say he's not, you've done something wrong? You haven't thrown a pick yet this year.
Yeah, and you went into that game against the top team in the CFL in that particular category. The Edmonton Eskimos went into that game with 9 interceptions in the 4 previous games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You didn't turn the ball over. At least you didn't turn the ball over offensively if you bowl Levi Mitchell. There's no fumbles, interceptions. So why take him out? He managed the game well. I would take the performance you saw from Bo Levi Mitchell yesterday over a game where he throws 500 yards, four touchdowns with three interceptions.
I will say this, though.
I like those games.
He escaped.
He did.
There was a couple.
The one to Odell Willis that you mentioned was one.
Bang in the numbers.
But at the end of the day, it still says zero interceptions for Bo Levi Mitchell. And that's, I'll take that over a 500-yard game.
I won't, but all right. Listen, we do have some news today involving the Stampeders, actually quite a bit. I know we've got a very special guest coming up in a minute, but I want to take an opportunity. John Cornish speaking to the media for the first time since being placed on the 6-game injured list. And, you know, here's, again, part of what makes John Cornish John Cornish is this is not this is a guy that doesn't give you just cliches. He speaks from the heart.
I sort of thought that me rushing back was not an ideal thing. My head's been fine, but, I have other issues sort of going on related to the concussion that, I'm trying to make sure are, all good before I rush back. And for me, maybe I'm on the 6-game for 3 games, maybe it's 6. It doesn't really matter. For now, my priority is just getting all good.
Did you have a say in the decision?
I approached them with the decision.
I love it. I approached them with the decision.
Interesting.
We know more now than we've ever known. We still know nothing about concussion. He absolutely has to take it slowly. The other thing, and I appreciate...
He's such a smart guy. We know how brilliant John Cornish is, so he's a smart guy. If he knows something's up.
It's not... Yeah, I mean, I don't think... You're right. You're a cerebral guy in terms of the answer, 100%. Also, and I appreciate this part from him, too.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't... That was one, like, I want to play. I mean, I'm a football player. I want to play football. But at the same time, I think it's best for me personally if I don't have a near time horizon, I have a far time horizon, so I can just worry about the things that I have to do before I can play rather than worrying about playing.
So didn't want to go through the, are you going to play this week? No. What about next week?
Mm-hmm.
You're on the 6-game list. Go out and get healthy. So good on him, and that's...
Smart decisions.
Absolutely. We'll take a break. Football Fridays continues.
Keenan McDougal coming up next. Defensive back for the Stampeders, but making a name for himself for the special teams, especially yesterday with the block punt for a touchdown and a huge play at the end of the second half as well.
And how important is this guest? Josh has already said. Doesn't even want to watch the rest of the week.
He's it.
He is the special teams player of the week in the CFL.
That's right.
So don't even bother. As far as I'm concerned.
He's got the numbers with the block punt and a touchdown. He's got the plays, the significant plays at the end of the first half. What else do you need?
A little later on in this hour, we will switch football leagues. We'll go down south of the border as we'll have a very special guest joining us to talk about, unfortunately, a big off-field issue in the NFL. Jordan Heath Rollins coming up on Football Fridays about 3:45 or so. He of Sportsnet, we of Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The best insiders, the breaking sports news when it happens, tons of play-by-play. Calgary, this is your sports radio. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Talking Calgary Stampeders football in the afternoon. This is the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Chuck Sanders stands on his 35 to wait for the football. It gets blocked. Stampeders have it, and they're going to score a touchdown.
Pretty simple, but that was a huge play in yesterday's game. Keenan McDougal, the block punt, brought it back for a touchdown that sparked the Calgary Stampeders to a 10-3 lead in the first quarter. Of course, Stamps would go on to win it 26-22. Welcome back to the big show, Football Fridays, on your Friday afternoon. Josh Humphreys with you and very pleased to be joined now down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. The man who blocked that punt and brought it back to the house for a touchdown, Keenan McDougal, joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline. Keenan, thanks a lot for this. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks.
No problem. It sounds good. I mean, I guess you are doing pretty good. I guess take us back to that play last night at Commonwealth Stadium. You block the punt, take it back for the touchdown to give the Stampeders an early lead, an early jump for your team. Walk us through that play.
We wanted to pressure them early, and they were kind of deep in their own end. So we went for the block. I ended up getting to the line pretty clean, got to the block point and plopped it in my hands and ran a few more yards, and that was it.
into the house for the touchdown there. And also, at the end of the first half, you were involved in another key play. The Eskimos tried to go for a fake punt. Chris Jones running the sweep, and you're the man who ended up making the stop on that. They just about got to the first down marker, but you stopped them short there. Maybe walk us through that play.
Well, yeah, that was kind of a surprise. There was a couple of us that kind of got our eyes in the backfield soon enough and flowed to the ball, and it's kind of lucky that we got them right before the first down marker. I wasn't sure whether they got it or not, but ended up working out for us pretty well.
And you talk about that being a bit of a surprise. Is there, you know, you don't see those kind of plays coming at whatsoever. There's nothing when they line up for a fake like that would tip you off that they were doing that kind of a play?
Alignment-wise, no. Once the play started, they kind of started blocking a little longer than normal, and so that's when I got my eyes back in the backfield and saw what was going on.
And I guess for you guys, I'm sure you practice and you prepare for plays like that all season long, that those plays might come up and might happen.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to be ready, and that's why we you know, we don't have a solid defense and coming through with edges on the sides, and so we're able to stop those types of things. But a lot of it ends up just kind of being read and react.
Keenan McDougal joining us down the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline, part of Football Fridays. A huge game of special teams for the Calgary Stampeders yesterday as they knock off the Edmonton Eskimos 26-22. Maybe just take us back to that game overall. Again, offensive struggles on both sides of the ball, but that's going to happen when you have two outstanding defenses going head-to-head. I guess in your mind, and you know, kind of what you saw from last night for the victory for your team.
Well, I mean, obviously the important thing is we came out with a win, right? I mean, had we not won, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you guys. Mm-hmm. I think in any game, whether it's special teams or offense or defense, you know, some area on the team's got to step up and make the plays that are needed. And it doesn't really matter who when you win, right? So we as a special teams unit try to build on the last week. We didn't play particularly well against Hamilton and kind of wanted to take some steps forward, and I think we did that.
Two straight games right now for you guys that the offense hasn't been clicking for you guys for whatever reason that might be, but you guys are still pretty happy with the result. And maybe just talk about how the defense has to step up, or even in last night's case, how special teams can step up and play a key role in the victory.
Well, I mean, you said it, right? I mean, our offense, I think we're still going to be improving and stuff as the year goes on, but it's a team game. So any facet of the game, you gotta take the plays when you can, and just capitalize on them.
And for you, I mean, defensive battle like we saw yesterday. I mean, the top defense Edmonton had coming in, they had forced all sorts of turnovers. They were kind of intimidating. You guys as well, not a bad defense at all. You're no pushover on the defensive side of the ball. So a really defensive battle like that. You enjoy that?
Honestly, I enjoy winning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. Whether we score 20 points a win, or 7 points a win, or 50 points a win, you know, win to win.
Maybe just talk about the defense this year for you guys. It's been pretty good. A lot of good guys contributing and helping you out. Keon Raymond right now out of the lineup, but guys like Juwan Simpson, Charleston Hughes, they've been huge for the defense so far this season.
Yeah, I think that having Rich Stuhler back there coordinating things has been great. It's kind of putting guys in good spots to just make plays, and the guys who have been in there have been playing really well.
And you guys are obviously battling through injuries, not only defense, especially on the offense with guys like Mo Price and, of course, John Cornish out with injuries now. Then yesterday, a few more guys on the offensive side of the ball going down with injuries. But the Stampeders, especially, I mean, you've been around for 3 years now on the team. You've seen it before. This team always seems to have an ability to bounce back, and really everybody pulls up their socks and helps out when there's injuries.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why. We have kind of seemed to be injured more often than we would like to, mm-hmm. obviously, but that's why you have depth on a football team, and everyone's got to step up when they need to be.
I mean, you talked about the special teams a little bit earlier, but maybe just talk about how important of a role, because when people think of it, it's all about the offense putting other touchdowns and the defense stopping it, but special teams, especially for a guy like you that plays a key role in the special teams, they are a pretty key part of the game.
Oh, definitely. Well, I think a lot of it comes down to, I mean, it's kind of a hard to define term, but people talk about momentum in sports a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And special teams, I think, is an area where that plays a big role, right? You know, you get a block punt, you get a touchdown. They go for a fake punt, we stop and get a touchdown the next play. You know,
yeah.
That a team feeds on that type of thing, and I think that ends up playing a big role over the course of a game.
Keenan McDougal joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline. Just a few more for you. I want to talk about your career. You're a Canadian guy, born in Saskatoon, going to the college of the University of Saskatchewan before joining the Calgary Stampeders. But maybe just your 3 years in the CFL, where you feel like you are now that when you first came into the league?
Well, it kind of started off with a bang in 2012. And 2012 went pretty well for me. Last year was kind of frustrating with some injuries, so I kind of came in this year just kind of with a chip on my shoulder, I suppose, you know, trying to get back to where I was in 2012 and just stay healthy. We've had a pretty successful team, and, you know, we just got to make things happen at the end of the year, right? We got to the Grey Cup in 2012, didn't make it happen. Last year kind of had a disappointing end to the season, so this year, every year the goal is the Grey Cup.
And you talk about coming in with a bang and a spectacular start to your CFL career. The very first game you play, the season opener against Montreal, a fumble recovery, 63 yards for a touchdown in your rookie season in 2012. That had to be a pretty cool experience, not only just to get your first touchdown or something like that happen, but have it happen in your first CFL game.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal. I mean, I started that game because Eric Fraser, who was a starting safety, was out with an injury. And it happened so early in the game, you know, you just weren't expecting it. And honestly, it's kind of like that play yesterday. The ball kind of just popped from my hands, and I just ran with it. But yeah, it's pretty exciting for that to be my first game and have such a big play happen so early.
And I imagine you being a Saskatchewan guy, the CFL has been something that was a dream of yours for a long time, not only playing for the University of Saskatchewan, but being from Saskatoon. I'm assuming you were a Riders fan growing up, but I mean, it had to be pretty cool to be in the CFL. It's had to be something that's been a lifelong goal of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I played football since I was grade 7, and kind of as the years went on and it started becoming, you know, maybe in the mix or whatever, that was always a goal to kind of make it here, and so now I just got to win the cup.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I guess the final goal, I mean, what happens when you play the Riders now? I'm sure they were a favorite when you were going up, but it's obviously cool to play against them now. I'm sure it's all Stampeder pride, though.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know what? I was a football fan growing up. I wasn't so much a Rider fan. I never really drank green Kool-Aid. but yeah, it's always fun playing there. Their fans are pretty crazy. But winning in that stadium is one of the best feelings.
Yeah, definitely about to be pretty cool for you. Well, Keenan, thanks a lot for taking some time and joining us. Congratulations on which was a phenomenal game against yesterday. Had a very key part in the Stampeders' victory. Want to wish you the best of luck moving forward, and especially getting ready for next week now. The BC Lions in town.
Awesome. Thanks very much, guys.
There you go. That is Keenan McDougal joining us down the Subway Restaurants Fresh Take Hotline after a huge game against the BC Lions yesterday. As Football Fridays continues here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, The Big Show with you this afternoon. Obviously, that was a very good game for Keenan McDougal. I want to thank him for joining us on the program, and a huge game for him, the fumble return. You heard it there. Special teams, they play a huge, huge role in the game. A lot of people think it's all about the offense and all about the defense, but having Keenan McDougal talk about the special teams there, it's a pretty important role. He says whether it's a block punt or whether it's stopping on a gamble like that leads to a touchdown, special teams plays a pretty big role.
Well, and Mark Killam deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, he does.
You know, Mark Killam is the special teams coordinator, and you watch him on the sidelines. You know, you see the shots of him talking to John Huffnagel, and you know, they hustle. They are the right now. Don't you think that the Calgary Stampeders are probably the best example going of three phases of football?
Yeah,
because the offense is not clicking like everybody wants it to click.
Mm-hmm.
Special teams has been terrific.
Yep.
And the defense has been terrific. Yep. And when you have two of those things going as well as they are, it'll carry you.
Well, and that's the thing. If you win two of the three phases of a football game, if you're better at the special teams and the defense, maybe your offense has the ability to not strike on all cylinders like you'd like. You're sure you'd like all three phases of the game to be at the top level, but if only two of the three are going, I mean, it's very good, and it makes it a lot easier on your team, gives you a good chance to win. And you know, Keenan says it there. They know the offense is struggling right now, or not struggling, but they're trying to get better and better. They're going through different phases. There's tons of injuries that they're battling through, so they need to find a way to make things work, and that's exactly what they've done.
Now, you and I are sitting here, you know, saying, well, offense is working, defense and special teams are. The quarterback, the guy who's in charge of the offense, Bo Levi Mitchell, defending his group, today.
But, you know, we got to win. That's the most important thing. We lean on our defense this week. We lean on our special teams. You know, those guys played outstanding on every facet out there. You know, it was fun to watch.
You know, he's not big into taking – he's not big using the word I.
No.
He is
– which is very good.
Right, right. And you mentioned this earlier. Here's a guy that has, you know, done a lot of things – but has not thrown an interception through four games for a rookie quarterback, which I guess essentially he is. That's a rookie starter for sure. That's a feather in his cap.
I mean, there were still balls out there they could have got. You know, they just dropped them. But I mean, that's what's going to happen when you got five guys running routes and 10 guys covering. You know, it's not going to be very many holes. You know, and the same point though, it means you can't take chances. You can't just try and force windows. You got to make sure you're getting your checkdowns and using my feet. You know, taking off and running when I have to. So, you know, that's things we'll work on because I think some, you know, going to be kind of the flavor of the league right now as the team's trying to do that.
There you go. There's Bo Levi Mitchell. We will have some we'll give you some audio from Nick Lewis a little later on. Nick talked today, and Nick was Nick. Nick didn't shy away from the questions. There are going to be those who are going to listen to him and go, well, you know, that's not what I would like him to say. It's clear that Nick is frustrated that they're not throwing the ball to him. He was caught in a ratio situation last night when Matt Walter got hurt.
Yeah.
Got stuck on the sideline.
It's unfortunate that happens.
And his streak of 166 games of catching at least one pass comes to an end.
Done.
Tough.
But you know what? I'm happy that I'm hearing Nick Lewis say, I'm not happy because I still believe I can contribute to this team. I want to contribute. Yep. I want the ball. I'm a competitor. I like that. And we always beg in the media for something different than the, well, it's not about me, it's about the team sort of thing.
I agree with that. But if I'm up in Eminem today, I'm stealing that audio and go, oh, look, they got problems. There's Nick Lewis. Nick Lewis is unhappy.
They can turn it any way they want.
No, yeah, but that's how it works. Yeah.
Rest of the league will say that, and it's Nick Lewis, and Nick Lewis has that reputation that when Nick Lewis speaks his mind and says something that he's frustrated,
there's no filter.
There's no filter, and it's going to be turned negative by a lot of people around the CFL.
I will see if we can't get Nick on here in the next little while. Love to have that conversation with him. We'll take a break on Football Fridays. When we come back, we will continue, but we're going to go south of the border. Jordan Heath Rawlings of Sportsnet covers the NFL for us. He will stop by. Just not a good, another black eye, I believe, off the field for the NFL yesterday involving the Baltimore Ravens running back, Ray Rice. We'll talk to him about that. Also, training camps are getting underway. So that's coming up. And just a programming note, the big story at 4 o'clock, Brad Treliving, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. He's going to join us. We'll talk about signing Sam Bennett. It's Football Fridays here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960. Sounding good on the radio and even better on your phone. Download the Rogers Radio app and take Sportsnet 960, The Fan, everywhere. In the afternoon, this is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Big win by the Stampeders last night, 26-22. We'll be talking a little bit about the Stampeders win coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. I don't think that one's going away anytime soon. Another busy, busy week in the CFL. But the National Football League, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the biggest pro sport in North America, just ramping up their training camps. The Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, I believe August 3rd. So it's right around the corner. But the big story in the NFL the last couple of days has involved running back Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens. He was indicted on a third-degree assault charge after a physical incident with his then-fiancée in Atlantic City in the offseason. That in turn led to a suspension from the NFL, a two-game suspension. But you know what? I'm kind of dealing on the perimeter. What I prefer to do is go down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline and bring in from Sportsnet one of our NFL guys, and that's Jordan Heath Rawlings. Jordan, thanks for doing this. First of all, maybe you're taking, and did I miss any of the details on this story? Because I think details are kind of important when it comes to a story like this.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's a funny situation because everybody seems to feel like they have to weigh in and everybody wants to know, you know, was it enough, was it not enough? And I really think there's not there's not too many details to hash over. You know, he did it. He admitted it. He publicly apologized for it. And I think we wouldn't be having this plethora of hot takes out there this afternoon if the NFL had done the right thing and thrown the book at him.
And it is safe to say, then, we're all in agreement. This is not the right thing. Two games is somewhat it just seems so out of step and out of step. Let's leave it at that.
Well, for a league that prides itself on harsh discipline and coming down on guys who cause trouble off the field, when it actually pops up in the face of, you know, regardless of his year last year, you'd label Ray Rice a star player. It's pretty ridiculous. Josh Gordon, who led the NFL in receiving yards, had a couple of puffs of weed in the offseason, and he might be looking at a 16-game ban. And Ray Rice can, admit to domestic assault, and he's gone for two games. He'll be back in the middle of September. Insane.
The response to all of this is you kind of talked about, Jordan. I'm curious about some of the things and what struck out. Let's deal first of all with John Harbaugh with Baltimore's. I think I got the wrong Harbaugh, didn't I?
It's
John Harbaugh. Yeah, okay.
John.
Sorry.
Yeah.
When there's two, you never know. His comments seem to grab some people the wrong way too.
Well, I mean, I understand what he was trying to do with that. He wants to get on with the business of running his football team, and, you know, he knows that he's going to spend the next week talking about this, whether he likes it or not. Mm-hmm. So he was just trying to get out in front of it and, admit that they're not going to appeal the suspension, which of course they're not because they got off easy, and hopefully move along. But when he started talking about how, oh, yeah, you know, this is a good lesson for kids that there are consequences, well, it's also a lesson for kids that if you're a star player, maybe if you do certain things, there's not as many consequences as there should be.
Is this a story that, in your opinion, has legs, or is this another story that, you know, is percolates in the system for a couple of days, training camp opens up, and it's forgotten about?
I think as bad as the NFL's response to this was, I think this story has legs because all the NFL media came back from vacation and training camps opened and nobody'd been cut yet and nobody'd been injured yet and there'd been no preseason games yet. So you have to find something to talk about. And then the NFL, which is contrary to what it usually does, because it's usually pretty smart about things like this, decided to basically load up everybody's hot take rifles. And so now you're going to get 4 days of should Ray Rice have been suspended and what does this say about our culture. And the reality is it says something bad and we should move on to talk about football.
Jordan Heath Rawlings from Sportsnet, our guest on the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. How bad is the image issue for the NFL, or is that just seeing it through the prism of the day's events or the events of the last day? Because it seems like this league really struggles in the offseason, kind of staying out of the police blotter.
Oh, that's an interesting thing, because when we've actually broken down the numbers in Sportsnet magazine a couple of times, and you know the reason you hear so much about NFL players getting arrested in the offseason is because on any given time there's about 1,600 to 1,800 players signed to NFL contracts, which is, you know,
sure,
double the next league and, you know, quadruple basketball and more than quadruple basketball. So, you know, the fact that there's been 20 or 21 off-season arrests, that means if there's three guys in the NBA getting arrested, it's the same ratio. NFL players, on a whole, are very well-behaved, more well-behaved than the general public, and they do more charity work than the general public. The problem is that the NFL is also the most covered league in the world, and it's got the most media attention, and it's the focus of pretty much the first 10 minutes of every sports center as soon as the league comes back to training camp. So everything that happens gets a ton of attention. And, you know, unfortunately, at times like this, and rightly so, we want to, you know, look at the people who have done really bad things and make an example of them. And it's a shame the NFL couldn't have done more in that regard.
That's interesting. And I want to go right back to the premise of this. So there was, and I mean, I am a Sportsnet subscriber, so I should probably know this, but there was, you have run these numbers in the past then.
Yeah, we've looked them up, and I think I've written about them on sportsnet.ca before, actually. But it's, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back and look throughout the year, some years are worse than others, obviously. And
sure,
actually, this year has been, there's been fewer NFL players arrested this year than last year by a pretty decent number. Now, five of them have been Ravens, which is, you know, every couple years one team gets out of control in the offseason, and it starts to bring in all sorts of interesting questions about, you know, team discipline and where they get their leadership from. But, yeah, in general, NFL players get arrested as much or less as any professional athletes, who tend to get arrested as much or less, mostly less, than members of the general public. And that's because they have a lot of money. They have a lot to lose, and they don't have to go out and commit crimes. They just don't do it. But because they're public figures, you know, it gets more coverage. Same as politicians are public figures and get more coverage too, even though the average mayor gets arrested less than the general public.
Yeah, well, at least, you know, the one in Toronto.
Well, he hasn't been arrested.
Fair enough. That's why we bring you on. See, that's exactly right.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, it is. Roger Goodell, if we're aware of these numbers, Roger Goodell would be aware of those numbers. I mean, is that part of the armor that he wears in situations like this?
Yeah, I mean, Roger Goodell likes to pride himself on ruling his league with an iron fist. And, you know, it's funny because ESPN is obviously a big partner of the NFL, and you started to see them kind of saying yesterday as the suspension came down that the NFL had really come down on Ray Rice, when, of course, a lot of other people who aren't so closely tied to the NFL thought that that was the opposite of what had happened. But he won't let something pass unnoticed. The question is how serious he is and whether or not he just wants to make certain stories go away. I mean, certainly you could say the same thing, and many people have, about the NFL's response to the concussion issue.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, we're in conversation with Jordan Heath Rawlings from Sportsnet. To that end, I mean, are we dealing with a football culture that really, I mean, here we are on the outside, you know, this is not right. But inside that culture, I mean, you got the Chris Cluey incidents, or the situation going on in Minnesota, I should say. You've got all of these things that seem, from the public standpoint, to be, you know, very despicable. But inside football, do they really feel they have a problem? Is Ray Rice really an issue for football people, or is this just on the outside?
I'm sure, like it is in any sport, that opinions vary. You know, I'm sure you have organizations which have zero tolerance for that, and mm-hmm. I'm sure, and I certainly wouldn't say anyone in particular, but I'm sure there are other organizations where stuff like that gets said and nobody responds to it. I mean, you saw some pretty ugly stuff coming out of the Miami Dolphins locker room last year.
Right.
And, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, there's that kind of, in any professional sport, there's that kind of locker room atmosphere. And I think it's a really good thing that in the last couple of years we've really turned our eye towards it and are trying to, you know, get across that that's not acceptable. Because, well, what those professional athletes do in their own locker room, you know, might get thrown under the table as long as they win, or might be in the privacy of, you know, grown adults hanging around with each other. It's the message that that culture sends down towards young people who are playing sports. And I think, you know, if you asked anybody who cares about the culture in a locker room, that's really what they care about. And the fact that whether or not it's still going on in professional locker rooms, the message is getting out there that it's not appropriate to go on in youth sports or high school sports, that's an important message.
One final thought on what we've been talking about, and I would like to take the opportunity to ask you a couple of football questions as camp opens up.
Oh, please, yes.
What happens next in the Ray Rice story? What are you anticipating comes up now? I asked you earlier if you thought it was going to go away, and I don't think you think it is. What happens next?
I think you're seeing what always tends to happen in these stories, whereas the people involved, you know, make their statement and now are going to try to keep their head down and hope everything goes back to normal. And because they're not going to talk about it anymore, what's going to happen is the media is going to start turning on each other, which you're already seeing today with Stephen A. Smith, who said some really dumb things on mm-hmm. First Take on ESPN. And the rest of the media are now weighing in on Stephen A. Smith, who will then respond, and the rest of the media will weigh in on his response, because Ray Rice isn't going to say anything anymore.
Right.
John Harbaugh is not going to say anything. Roger Goodell is not going to say anything. So, you know, this story will go on as long as the media needs it to keep going, and then at which point we'll turn our eyes to real football.
You know, we're chasing our tails is basically what you're saying.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Jordan Heath Rawlings of Sportsnet, our guest on the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. Just a couple of minutes, but I'm curious, for you as an observer, what has your eye as camps open up here? What are the storylines that jump off the page for you?
I'm certainly interested in what's going on in Seattle, where Marshawn Lynch has said he's not coming to camp and he wants his deal reworked. He's the Super Bowl winner, starting running back for the Super Bowl winners, and he actually just had his deal reworked a couple of years ago, and now he wants it reworked again. And, I mean, if you look at his contract, you can make the case that he deserves it. But it's an interesting test, because what you've really seen a lot lately of in the NFL, and it's probably a smart move, is running backs simply not getting paid as much as other positions, because they don't tend to last as long. They don't tend to, they tend to get hurt. And
yeah.
So much of their success depends on both the quarterback and the offensive line, that what you find is, you know, Marshawn Lynch is a fantastic runner, but you could probably take him off that team and replace him with Christian Michael, who's behind him, and get 75 to 80% or maybe even more of his production, just because the Seahawks have a decent run blocking line, and you know, Russell Wilson's play with his legs can open up running lanes. So it'll be interesting to see who caves first in this situation, because that's the best place for Marshawn Lynch to be, and his contract's not that bad now, but they're not going to give him any more money, I don't think.
What team's hovering under the radar here? I mean, as you look at the off seasons and you look at the draft, you look at free agency, is there a team that has caught your attention that's nobody's really kind of made much of, or kind of just out there and doing their own thing that may surprise people?
Sure. Well, I don't think it's necessarily because of a ton of off-season moves, but it does seem to me like everybody's forgotten about the Falcons.
Okay.
That was a team that, at the beginning of last year, certainly a lot of people had penciled in to go to the playoffs. Probably a few people had them as dark horses to go even further than that. And then they really got rocked by injuries, obviously the most key one being Julio Jones, who's arguably one of the top three or four receivers in the NFL, who went down about five or six games into the year. He's apparently back and working back in. Roddy White had a rough year with injuries last year, and he's apparently fully a go. They just gave him a new contract. So that you can easily make the case that that's the best receiving duo in the NFL. And Matt Ryan was pretty decent last year, even when he didn't have them to throw to. So I do think that that's a team that nobody's really paying attention to, but if everybody stays healthy, they could jump right back up into that 8, 9, 10 win range.
Jordan, I really appreciate this. Again, wish it was under better circumstances, but it is a story that everybody's talking about in terms of Ray Rice. What I do hope is that we can get you on here in the next little while and actually talk about preseason football and get ready for a regular season.
That'll be lovely. Can't wait for the Hall of Fame game.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
Jordan Heath Rawlings from Sportsnet joining us. As he said, everybody's talking about it. If you, there was a really good take on this yesterday. Keith Olbermann, his show, which... Mm-hmm. We don't get up here. We did, and then we don't anymore. But if you go to his YouTube channel, you can check it out. And very strong opinion.
Deadspin's got it on there as well.
Yeah, very strong opinion.
Very good stuff.
That's Football Fridays. We will have some more football talk coming up for you in the next hour or two. But when we come back, it is the big story. He is the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Brad True Living will join us second day in a row. This is exciting. All kinds of signings.
It's been a long time.
This one's a big one. Sam Bennett, the Flames' highest pick ever, fourth overall, inking his entry-level contract. We'll talk to the Flames GM about that next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
If it's on the ice, it's on the air and online right here. Calgary's home for the NHL. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.